This is the Registry Podcast.
Welcome to the Real Perspectives Podcast, where we delve deep into the realms of real estate, technology, and the stories that shape our world. I'm your host, Vladimir Bosanets, co-founder and publisher of the Registry, bringing you insights from the leaders and visionaries who are shaping our future. Today, we have the pleasure of welcoming Mahmoud Ghassemi, the Chief Executive Officer of Sequoia, a major commercial electrical contractor based in Puget Sound. Mahmoud is known for his innovative approaches and strategic insights that have significantly impacted the industry. With a career that spans several facets of the real estate world, Mahmoud brings a wealth of knowledge and experience to our conversation today. Join us as we explore Mahmoud's journey, the lessons he's learned along the way, and his perspectives on the challenges and opportunities facing the real estate sector. Stay tuned and let's dive deep into the world of real perspectives with Mahmoud Ghassemi. Mahmoud, good morning. How's it going?
Good morning, Vlad. I'm doing well. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Can't complain. Start of the new year here and looking forward to an exciting 2024, I have to say. So where do we find you today? Where are you?
Well, I'm in the office today. Our office is in Redmond, Washington. So good day. It's not raining out, so that's good.
Good. Are you enthused to be in the office? Is everybody? You guys have probably been back in the office for quite a while. I imagine. Is that correct?
Yeah. So our industry is a little different than others. Being an electrical contractor as well as project management and engineering, you know, 70% of our workforce, they work in the field. So there's no option for them for remote work. And our project management, they have to work with them on a daily basis. So they have to come back to work. The management came back to work. And reconstruction, because we do a lot of collaborative approaches to how we solve solutions. And they just said, you know, we got to be back to work together with different departments and different groups. So essentially, we're back shortly after everybody started, people start coming back to work. We all came back in full force. There are only few people in our company then they can partially work from home. But essentially, Our construction, we're all back.
Yeah. Makes sense. Makes perfect sense. Well, Mahmoud, tell us a little bit about yourself, maybe kind of as an introduction, a little bit about, you know, you in the industry, kind of what your background is, how you got to Sequoia, and, road of your career and how it led you to where you are today.
Well, I appreciate it. I went to Washington State University, graduate as electrical engineering, and I always thought that I would be more into software or hardware side of the engineering, electrical engineering, and it just happened that I found an opportunity to work in electrical industry in construction. And it was originally was just engineering, so working with architects and other engineering disciplines, the mechanical, structural, civil. I really love it. I love the opportunity to work on different projects with different people, you know, collaborate. So I really, really enjoyed this industry. But the opportunity I had with the company had both engineering and construction. I started learning more about construction, pre-construction, working with clients, trying to file solutions, both in terms of engineering solution as well as cost solutions and schedule time. And I started gravitating toward the electrical design build.
Okay.
And so I was in that space for about 20 years. And there was an opportunity for me to join Sequoia and later on became one of the owners gave me that opportunity to come up with not just me, all of us together with all different groups and different partners to develop a design build, mostly concept plus industrial concept of industry. And we have had the opportunity to work with great team, and we have different perspective, different strength. So our company does industrial work, primarily in Boeing. And then we do a lot of design build, commercial, high rises, office building, you know, condos, as well as a lot of data centers. Our strong service department, taking care of the clients on a daily basis, and then working with wireless companies and come up with solutions that's suitable for them. So we're very diversified in our offerings. We can address clients' needs in a lot of different areas, from low voltage, medium voltage, and what have you. So I've been here for 22 years now. Okay. It's been a great ride. It's been awesome having an opportunity to work with a lot of young and up and coming and great folks. So it's been awesome.
Wonderful. Mahmoud, as you look at the organization as a whole, you mentioned there, you work with industrial and, you know, data centers. I think those are two kind of markets that seem to be very active these days, especially in the Pacific Northwest. Also, I guess my follow-up question is, you know, where geographically do you guys work, but also, you know, how do you see, you know, the demand for data centers really growing these days? It seems like it's one of these, you know, very active parts of the industry today.
Yes. Well, the industrial group, we actually been, we've been very, very lucky to have had the opportunity to work for Boeing, a great company, for 35 years. Up to 35 years we've been in business. There was a little bit of a slow period in the last few years, but it seems like they're back on track, and we're doing a fair amount of work. So that is an area, because it was slow to growth for a while. I think it's a great area to grow the 24 and beyond. As far as the data center concern, you know, the studies that I've read and people I've talked to, doesn't seem like there is an end in sight. The data doubles every 2 years, the amount of data, and they got to be stored someplace. Now, how the whole data center is shifting to cloud computing and to huge data centers, which are usually outside, like areas like Quincy. There is land is cheap, power is cheap, and that's where everything is going. So it has changed, but there's still some on-premise type of data centers and call centers that we work in Seattle. But the whole thing is shifting. There's a lot of different markets. There's a lot of different offerings. I don't see huge drop-off. They're pretty consistent in terms of the market share. And, you know, once you're in it, once you understand what the client's needs are, and there are a lot of different ones, usually that's a good area to continue to work, and I don't see how it's going to go down.
And has this given the company an opportunity to grow geographically also? I mean, you're based here in Redmond, but do you guys do work outside of Washington?
Most of our work is in the Puget Sound Basin for the most part. But we do follow clients. Some of our wireless companies, we follow them nationally. And then we've had some work we used to do with Boeing and F-22 classrooms on Air Force bases across the country. So while we are actually in different parts of the country, that's not really been our focus. Our focus has been to our home base and the amazing clients that we have right here, whether it's Microsoft and you got Boeing and Amazon and what have you. But the real geographical diversification is going to happen in the next few years as we start building a solid foundation and how our process and procedures are fine-tuned, established. then we will be able to take their model to different areas. But currently, our focus has always been around Washington.
Yeah. So where would you say as an organization, in terms of the types of services that you offer, you know, where's your focus today? And by today, meaning, you know, 24, 25, you know, just sort of in the most immediate needs, where do you guys think there's going to be an opportunity for, you know, growth?
The growth is, I mean, obviously, industrial is, you know, is pretty strong right now. The commercial is not very strong at the moment. There's been, you know, a little bit of setback. That might be, you know, a year or two before it comes back up. We also see growth in electrical vehicle charging stations, that the market, a lot of buildings are looking for charging systems, that even high-rise buildings, there are a lot of facilities. So there is a market out there to be had, and we've had few good successes, both in terms of large deployment of charging stations for big companies, as well as some of the companies that will be offering that for other organizations, such like school districts. There's a push for all the buses to be electrified, electrical vehicles. Therefore, they need a place and use, you know, for them to be charged overnight. So there are some needs. We haven't done a lot of residential type, although we're doing it, but that's not sort of areas that we're focusing. We're focusing on more commercial and large scale electrical vehicle charging systems. So those are what we've been focusing. Those have been really good. You know, the other one is state of course. You know, our business philosophy has always been around building relationships with clients, and we're focusing on that. Those opportunities has always been there for us, and they've helped us. They helped us back in the financial crisis of 2009 and 11. We stayed with the clients and we provided services that we did. And some of the special services we provide, like design build, which is a combination of we engineer and build at the same time, it gives us unique opportunities better than others. And you always find, you know, the best thing in this market is, which I've always told our up and coming and the younger project managers, is don't pick up bad jobs. You know, one of the things to do in a bad economy is don't pick up a bad job. Don't pursue the jobs that have 12 bidders. While it feels good at the moment when you pick up a job, you're gonna have to deal with it for the next 2 years. So, you know, strategically not being in that situation is a plus thing for us.
Yeah. You know, you mentioned the electrification of the school buses. Obviously, you know, electric vehicles have come into the forefront more and more, I would argue, you know, across the country and also globally. This is a movement that I think, from my perspective, is not going to go away. If anything, it's only going to grow. How do you, you know, perceive this, and, you know, what's your sense of kind of where the industry is heading with that? And by that, you know, I also mean, you know, are there opportunities for, you know, the grid to be redeveloped, for, you know, retrofitting and, you know, electrifying, you know, buildings to, you know, essentially, you know, provide, you know, heating and cooling and HVAC systems sort of, right, that are electric, right? But I'm also curious, you know, in terms of like the Inflation Reduction Act, there was a lot of stuff sort of thrown in there around electrification that I believe is just now kind of starting to come out. What's your sense? I mean, this is a big question, so I apologize for asking, you know, five questions in one, but it is a big story, and I'm curious, you know, how does your company and how do you personally, you know, perceive that as an opportunity?
I think the question you have is a very, very valid question. This is something that we have to deal with for years to come. I do agree with you that this is just the beginning of it. And it will continue on that path. And everybody's trying to find out what's the best solution for it. There's two ways to look at it. You can look at it statically. You know, statically would be to say, hey, everything got to be electric. Everything got to be electric because that's the way to do it, right? And then have a strong push toward it. And then the opposite school of thought is, well, the grid is not strong enough. We don't have the grid. We don't have the capacity. Therefore, we can't do it. So stop, right? I think when everybody look at it holistically, not just from small pocket point of view, you'll find out that, yes, it is great because it's no longer the government pushing it. A lot of people like the idea of driving electrical vehicles. So once the public, once the people decided that's what we want, that is the market that is not going to go away. So it is. But there's some setbacks. There's no question that the electrical infrastructure as we have it is not designed to handle that kind of a, you know, power demand. So there are challenges. So sometimes I feel, first of all, as far as I'm concerned, since we're in the electrical industry, anything electric is good for us, right? So from on a personal, selfish point of view, this industry is going to do well. The entire industry is going to do well because we have to upgrade our network system, electrical network system, because it hasn't been upgraded for many decades. So right. It generates a lot of work and all that. So from that point, it's good. The other thing that I think when you start looking at holistically is the government pushing, I know the state of Washington is pushing for this electrification. When you push it too much, when the system is not in place, when there's no standards right now, like we're still trying to figure out what these connection points are. We using just Tesla's model or a different model? There's a lot of things that needs to go into place, that they got to be some standards that we have to establish as an industry, or, you know, the charging system industry. So people will feel comfortable that if I buy a car, I can charge it wherever I want to go, as opposed to right now, they're not sure about it, right? It is good to push it, but also at the same time, you got to be looking at it holistically, how we can do it. If it pushes for the next 2 years or whatever the state of Washington was requiring it, even the state knows that they can't achieve those goals. So why push it and be inefficient while you're trying to be efficient? And I think right. It should be more of a holistic look from the industry, from the private industry, from the public institutions, to all got to come together and says, what is the best way to handle it? Yeah, I remember about 20 years ago when everybody was pushing for data centers everywhere, build data centers all over, and, you know, and everybody said, well, Seattle doesn't have the network for it. You know, we don't have the capacity. Well, the solution came later to say, well, now we're going to be on cloud. Then we don't need the data centers in Seattle. We can go build it in Quincy, Washington, right? So the solution, the private industry really came up with the solution they needed that was more efficient. A lot of people, including our company, we don't have a lot of servers in this building. We're on right. cloud computing. So I think the solution will provide, once you get the private industry get involved and the commercial side, we'll have the solutions. But one thing is for sure, we're going to electrification, and part of that will require the government to invest some money to infrastructure upgrade of how we're going to do it. So the industry is going to be changing in a major way that we haven't seen in years. But I think it's going to be interesting to see how everybody's going to come up with a solution. You already have a lot of solutions, like they have smart chargers. So if you can have 5 cars connected to it and it will balance itself, you charge at night. At night, we have a lot of electrical capacity and nobody's using it. So right. How do we set that up? They've already set up like a school district. There was a project we were working on, in fact, near our office, that the buses will come in, they connect them, but they wait until, you know, demand goes down in power, and that's when they charge them at night. So that actually is really going to help not have to change a lot of infrastructure, but there will be some changes on the utility side for sure.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned a couple of successful projects that you guys have done or have or are working on. Can you highlight some of these opportunities that were good for you, for your organization, and sort of how they, in some ways, you know, foretell where the industry is heading?
Well, I say generic because I don't want my competition to go to
the understand, same understand. But, yeah, the competition could be listening. You're right. So
yeah, but you know, it's like building gas stations. You know, when the cars start building automobile and building the gas station, how to build the gas station so people can use it. It's a brand new thing. It's just started. You know, you can't have gas stations for them because most people, residential people, will never go to any of these facilities to charge their car because they charge it at home. So that industry won't exist per se. But there will be superchargers in between cities for people who want to drive long distance that they can go stop. So everybody's trying to figure out what the industry is going to look like. A lot of companies that they have a fleet of electrical vehicles, and they're trying to figure out what is the most efficient way to install a system that doesn't exist. We don't have a lot of examples of it. So we are with a client. We've been doing a lot of R&Ds. So we come up with a design, they come up with a design. We actually go in different towns that they have installations. We install it. We're trying to figure out what is the most efficient way to package it so we can have like more of a manufacturing process to send them to. So there's a lot of, you know, if you want to get into this, you got to spend a lot of time in the R&D, trying to figure out what's the best solution for it. And I know a lot of companies like us are trying to figure out, okay, how do I build my stations, my gas stations for my needs? And how is that going to work out? How do power is going to get distributed? How do I have these station built? So we've been it's been fun, actually. It's been not a typical projects that, you know, you put the panels and ties it outlets and light fixtures. It's been fun. Every design we do is going to be the basis for the next version of it. But I see this to continue.
Yeah. Mahmoud, I have a question for you that I think I know how you're going to answer, but I'm going to ask it anyway. I imagine that on certain projects, and maybe one of the reasons that when we, and I'll isolate this conversation just around, you know, car charge ports, but, you know, some of them don't work. There's this, a challenge around that. But I think part of it also depends on, you know, how they're installed and who the contractor is, right?
Yes. Yes.
I would love to understand how much of this is technology versus, you know, careful installation, you know, attention to detail from your side of the business. And again, I think I know what the answer is, but I would like to hear you say it.
Well, so we have had a few clients that we've talked to. They've had different installations. There were some successes, some failures. It's about the products more than the installation, but the installation is also, it is, it's different. It's outdoor. The how people connect to it is different. You got to pay a lot of attention to. It's a different environment we're working in. But one of the things that our clients were telling us is actually not having a standard of what the charger should be, right? What ratings there are. There are some ratings, but not very regulated. What I've noticed that because everybody's looking for chargers, there are a lot of companies overnight, they become, you know, battery charging, you know, products. And they sell it on Amazon, they sell it, you know, on different outlets. And people buy it. And people don't know if it's a good product or not. Is it going to work or not? Is it going to work for a year? Is it not going to work on that? So I've noticed that that is one of the issues, and how the product is built overnight is the product itself is done well. Is it going to be connected to our systems when we're doing the field? So just because if there's a huge push toward it without any standards being developed that everybody will follow, you know, every light fixtures, every outlet has a UL listing. The UL listing tells them that this is how the product is going to be built. So the public can take a look at it and says, okay, I like that. It's UL listing, it's safe to use. Right now, we're not as regulated, and everybody, it's a market. You can sell chargers to anyone. So there's a lot of products out there, they're not good. And the products, so we've seen that to be the biggest problem. More than the installation, but the installation is also an issue.
Yeah, interesting. What have been some of the challenges for your organization? You know, every industry I feel post-COVID was affected by, you know, lack of employees and really difficult to find workers and skilled workers. Are there enough electrical engineers out there or electricians in general? How do you guys deal with some of those issues?
So we are, you know, as a the multiple answers to your question as it relates to just the field workforce, electricians. Prior to COVID, we had a problem. In all the years, decades before, everybody starts sending their kids to college, and I'm a college graduate, right? I believe college. The education you get is invaluable. It's the way you think, the way you collaborate with you know, with other students, with the teacher, meeting deadlines, all that prepares a young man or a young woman to be ready to go into workforce, right? Those are all valid, even regardless of which major you have. So there was a huge push for sending the kids to college, and there was less emphasis on getting to trade schools. So prior to COVID, we start seeing this is going to be a problem, and it will be continue to be a problem. So one of the things we need to do as a society and then as an industry is to go to high schools and explain to them that you can be an engineer, but you can also be a foreman, a field supervisor. And, you know, frankly, the union guys and the field supervision, they make more money than engineers. And some people like working in the field versus somebody else likes to work in the office. So there was a challenge, and our industry is going to face that the next few years. I'm on the board of National Contractor Association, the local chapter. And we've been discussing that for a while, that how do we do that? How does the union needs to go to high school and talk and promote? So there was a problem there to begin with. COVID created a different problem for us. We're still getting our good students from all the colleges, local state colleges that we go and get interns, we hire from them. We haven't had a lot of problems. Some of the industries with COVID, they're getting hit harder because they have, you know, the barriers to get those jobs. You know, you don't need to major, you know, college degree or accounting and all that. Those are getting hit harder because those, for whatever reason, decided that people are not going to come back, or they've already moved out of the area. It's too expensive. I've got all the issues with Seattle and what have you, and people are moving out. They're not there. We haven't quite seen that part because the type of people we hire, both from the union point of view and all that, they're higher skilled people, and we haven't had as much. The challenge we had with COVID, we did have a small challenge is when you start having some of the people start working from home for months and year in, and they go like, I like what I do. And that became a challenge for us because we're more of a collaborative company. And if you start looking at the big picture, you know, I look at my career, there were so many people impacted my career, right? From mentoring, from education, collaboration, learning from another, challenging my assumptions and what have you. And it's hard to do it remote, right? Some right. industry can't. Your sales right. industry, absolutely. Even some of the software companies, they can do it up to a point. But even Microsoft and Amazon, they said, no, come back. We want collaboration. We want challenges of idea. We want to come up with a better idea and just get tasks done. So COVID hasn't impacted us as much, but as the industry, our biggest problem still continues, regardless of COVID, is the field workforce, trained field workers, because we just don't have enough people replacing the people who are retiring. So that's something that has been the forefront of, we've talked to the union, we've talked to our industry partners, and we're dealing with that with mechanical contractors, plumbing, all those trades. And I think the solution will present itself, but it takes some major effort to change that direction. In fact, I'm also on the executive leadership board on College of Engineering at Washington State, and we've seen the number of students not going to college. It started dropping. Now it's started picking back up a little bit. Hopefully it will do. But, some people say, why am I going to college? Because I'm going to end up doing something that is not related to my major anyways.
Yeah, and you have a perspective of both on the supply and on the demand side. I mean, you are mostly impacting the demand side in a sense that you're hiring these folks. On the supply side, do you feel like the schools have enough capacity to, let's say, double the number of kids going through these types of trades? Is that a challenge also?
I think time will tell how big of a challenge it is, because with the one of the things that COVID proved, that you can be at home and still go to college. Now, did you get a good quality? Did you get the collaboration? Did you learn that? What I'm saying, those are the impacts we're going to see later. These kids have really been in a basement studying college online, right? Which can be done. But when you go to industry, do they know how to work with other people? Do you have the work and work ethic? And so those are the things that is going to present itself. Time is going to tell whether this trend of not going to college is going to continue, or it's just a moment. And because a lot of people, they still love the college life, right? To go meet people and learn in a classroom is so different. Everybody was really not happy about staying home and go to college. That's not what they signed up. So I think the colleges are going to be fine. I think most colleges, they've always had budget problems, the financial problems. It's just the changing times. And I don't think we have all the data, or at least I'm not aware of, where this is going to go. But I think it's going to find itself in the right spot. There were a lot more kids going to be more into trade schools to have those opportunities, more hands-on. And then you're going to find out that a lot of the students that say, well, I like going to college because I want to be a management and different leadership. So they're different type of kids, and they're different, and their needs for all of them everywhere. I think we're going to find the right spot in a few years.
Yeah, interesting. Mahmoud, as we close our conversation, I have a couple of sort of questions I also want to ask you. One is more kind of macro. What do you think for a commercial electrical contractor are going to be some of the drivers of the business in the next, 5 years or so?
Well, the competition has always been there, right? We all compete for the same market. As the demand for electrical goes up, as the demand for low voltage systems, security, AV, just technology in general goes up, you can stay to where we are right now and be typical, or try to reinvent yourself to figure out a better way to do it. The construction industry is an old industry that wasn't upgraded for years. In the last 20 years, I've seen a major shift about coming into the right century, right? We still used to, 30 years ago, we built everything on the site, ship everything over there and build on the site. Now we're learning how with technology of 3D modeling and BIM, we're trying to figure out, okay, what is the best solution before we actually go in the field and install it. And based on that, we start learning about what kind of product we can be built way ahead of time. How do we, our design changes. And then the one that I think is going to make a difference in the industry is the whole technology. I mean, look at, you know, even your own house. I mean, the amount of technology you have today that, you know, lights comes on and your AC turns off and you got the security, they alert you. You'd be in Mexico, in Cabo. In fact, I happen to be there and my friends say, oh, somebody's in front of the door, right? The amount of technology is going to our, even our homes and all that is going to change. And I think the industry has to stay on top of it. You start getting more innovative. You start figuring out a better way to do it. I think it's fantastic times for anybody who's willing to, you know, relook at everything over again. Not the way we've always done it, but this is how we're going to do it. I think the industry is going to be, there's a huge demand for quality contractors, quality engineers, whether it's on the distribution side, or utility side, building side, commercial, healthcare. Look at the healthcare. It's going to change drastically. I mean, COVID really helped with, you know, when if I need a doctor, I don't need to go to somebody's office for just a regular checkup. Right? Sure. All that technology is coming to everybody's home, and the way we medical practices are going to change. And you still need the surgeries and all that, which even that, and most of the surgeries are, I mean, you can have a hip replacement and leave that night, go home. I think
it's replaced by a robot too these days. No, now yes. As well.
I think it's fantastic. I think it's going to be a great opportunity for the right contractors, the right engineers to do even better.
Yeah. As our final question, as I mentioned earlier to you, you know, one of our goals with this podcast is to tap into you know, a younger demographic entering the industry these days. And I would love, you know, with that in mind, to hear your perspective on some lessons learned, maybe even advice to your younger self. You know, something that a younger person entering the industry, you know, should follow or, you know, hopefully listen to.
That's, you know, I remember when people, I used to ask that question when I was younger. Now everybody asks me about, hey, since you're an old man, what do you think should tell other people? But I guess I'm facing the fact that I'm getting much older. I think it's a very, very valid question. When you said, you know, tell my younger self. Well, when I grew up in this industry, I started learning in the 80s and 90s, you know, the workforce and the way the relationship with the client, you know, with the management and the employees were different, you know. You know, I really got very, very little training. And the training is you put them in there and see if it sinks or, you know, or swim or sink, right? But they would survive. And I thought the industry was just trying to be competitive and just trying to beat the next person rather than reinventing ourselves. But back then, people in my age, my era, we always worked really hard. We was just, work was important, company was important. And you got to work really hard to stay and be appreciated by the opportunities the company provide. Things have changed with the new generation. So the new generation, I can't tell them how I did it. I've had the honor and privilege to go to some of the campuses and talk to students in construction management and engineering. You know, the things that I would say to the younger people of this era. If you choose to go to a company, make sure the company is forward-thinking and they have a training system, process. They have a development, their leadership development, that they actually invest time and money into you. And I've told that to all the young people, don't go to a really small company because they don't have those process procedures and they don't have the capacity to. Go learn there first. So that's one. The second one is look at the companies. Company is innovative, always looking for new ideas, how to change and all that. That's the company you want to attach yourself. But on a personal side, you know, we've got these young people that are coming in and they want, and we have to learn from them, right? We have to learn because they're more about work-life balance. I don't want to work, 40 hours. If I can get it done in 32, those are all great. Those are what we have to deal with. This is how generation thinks. My generation was 50 hours was standard. So if you want to do something, you got to do 60. So right. There is a balance between the two we have to learn. But here's what I will tell. And I happened to see that on a LinkedIn, there was an article. And I couldn't find it. Then I looked it up in the net and found something similar to that. And the article said, the title was, what are the 10 things that you are looking for in a new candidate that colleges don't teach? Teamwork, collaboration, work ethic. And it was a whole bunch of them. I read it. It made a huge impact. Like, that's when I take the kids. Regardless, there's a lot of great students and a lot of great colleges. There are a lot of companies to go, and they have multiple options of which company. I don't know. I'll pick this one versus that one. I get that. But when you go to workforce, then you're at the bottom. The things that they look at is this person trying to work harder? Does he have the work ethic? Does he work with other people? Is it collaborative? Does he know the concept of teamwork? And those are the sort of things that it's so critical to their future that has nothing to do with what they've studied. It has nothing to do with the jobs they have. So what I tell the younger me is look for those values that are important to a company. They're going the extra mile, making sure that you mentor the next generation. I would look for any project manager, any manager that always loves to find somebody, mentor them to, hey, move this up. This guy is awesome. This girl is doing a fantastic job, right? Those are the values that you have to instill in you, and you will be very, very successful. And it has nothing to do with the education. Doesn't have anything to do with what you've studied. But it has to do with everything the company is looking for. And to me, that's the best advice I can come up with for the young generations.
Mahmoud, that's amazing. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us and for your time to tell us a little bit about Sequoia and your industry. I wish you well and look forward to connecting with you soon.
Thank you so much for considering talking to me. I'm honored to be here. And the things I found out about myself, that things that made me successful, be here as an engineer or as a contractor, is not what I'm really looking for. I'm looking forward to improving people's lives and impacting and the people around me. And I really, really enjoy talking to young people. I learn a lot from them, the things, mistakes I've made, and hopefully I can show them a few things that's going to make them successful in their career.
That was another episode of the Real Perspectives podcast, and we thank you for taking the time to listen to it. Conversations like these help us comprehend our evolving industry better and hopefully provide a perspective that helps you understand the dynamics of commercial real estate. If you like this episode, please subscribe to our show and tell your colleagues about it. That is the best way to spread the news and help us remain relevant across the industry. Cheers.